Welcome back to the Deep Dive. So today we're jumping into Chapter 9 of Unraveling the Fabric of Fear.
That's right. This one's called Labels, Psychological Borders. Really interesting stuff.
Absolutely. And if you've been following along with our previous deep dives, you'll know this builds on what we've discussed before. Our mission today, really, is to unpack how and why we actually use these labels.
And, crucially, the psychological impact they have. On ourselves, on how we see others.
Exactly. And maybe how we can, you know, move beyond some of their limitations, see a bit more potential.
Yeah, unlock things. We'll be drawing on the chapter, obviously, and the references within it.
It's kind of wild when you stop and think how much these little tags, these labels, can shape our whole world, our interactions.
It really is. So the chapter kicks off by looking at the basic function of labeling. Why do we even do it?
Right. And it uses that analogy of complexity, doesn't it? Like trying to understand a car engine.
Yeah, exactly. You don't just stare at the whole thing. You break it down.
Right.
You identify the parts. That's a piston. That's a spark plug. That's a belt. You give names, labels.
It makes the overwhelming manageable. You categorize.
It's that reductionist approach. Makes sense for mechanics, maybe.
But, and this is the immediate warning sign the chapter throws up, right? That same reductionism when applied to people.
Uh-huh. It gets tricky. You start losing the holistic view, the bigger picture of how everything connects.
Yeah, you stop seeing the person in their context with all their thoughts and experiences, and you just see the label.
Mm-hmm. You see the engineer or the artist or even the difficult one. It becomes a shortcut.
A shortcut that really short changes understanding.
Totally. It reduces people down to a single perceived role or trait.
The chapter calls them boxes, which is such a good visual. Mm. We put people and ourselves into these little categories.
And once you have these boxes, you naturally start thinking about which ones are like close to yours and which are far away.
The whole in-group, out-group thing. If I label myself a sci-fi fan.
Right. You might feel an instant connection to someone you label a fantasy reader. Those boxes feel nearby, but maybe distant from someone labeled a sports fanatic.
What's fascinating here is how these internal borders then shape our interactions and our perceptions. Once something is labeled familiar, it can bring a sense of comfort. Conversely, if something is labeled as different, well, it can trigger a whole cascade of assumptions and even biases.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder about the underlying mental frameworks, almost like cognitive schemas that help us organize this information into these labeled boxes. And the chapter mentions that Psychology Today experiment.
Oh, yeah, the coin flip one. It's amazing how fast that happens.
Totally arbitrary groups, just based on a coin toss, and boom, instant favoritism for your own group.
It shows how deep that us versus them thing runs, even with completely meaningless labels.
And here's the kicker. The chapter argues that by labeling ourselves so rigidly,
we limit our own capacity for empathy.
Yeah.
That brings us neatly to how labels intersect with our pursuit of social value, something we unpacked back in chapter 4. How do these labels play into our desire for respect and, you know, belonging within a social group?
Yeah, thinking back to our discussion on social value, labels become really potent signals. We use them quite strategically, actually, to indicate our affiliation with particular in-groups.
Mm-hmm.
We chase labels we think are good or respected.
Like successful entrepreneur or respected academic.
Innovator, community volunteer, or even something as simple as identifying with a certain style of music or, I don't know, a sports team. By embracing these labels, we're broadcasting to others that we share certain values or aspects of our identity. And this can significantly influence how we're perceived and, well, valued within that group.
And in doing that, we might unconsciously start looking down on, or just not identifying with, labels seen as less valuable.
It taps into what's known as social identity theory. Our sense of self is partly derived from the groups we belong to, and labels are a key way we signal those affiliations.
So it's a way of saying, I belong here,
yeah,
without having to like spell it all out.
Exactly. But this desire to fit within these labeled groups can also have a really powerful effect on our behavior. We might start to adopt certain ways of speaking, particular opinions, or even consume specific things just to reinforce our connection to a label and solidify our position within that group.
Right.
This raises a really interesting point. How much of our behavior is driven by an authentic expression of self, and how much is shaped by our desire to align with the expectations that come with a particular label?
Yeah, that's tricky. It makes you wonder if we sometimes prioritize fitting the label over staying true to our own evolving sense of self. Well, what about our own self-worth? If we anchor our identity too firmly in these external labels, what happens to our sense of who we are when those labels change, or they're challenged, or maybe they just don't seem to fit anymore?
That's a critical question, really. If our self-worth becomes overly dependent on external validation through adopting labels, it can create a very fragile sense of self.
Mm.
When those labels are questioned by others, or even when we ourselves start to outgrow them, our self-esteem can really take a hit. What's fascinating is how easily we can become attached to these external markers of identity, sometimes even at the expense of our own internal sense of value and self-acceptance. So, our quest for respect tied to these labels actually builds more of these psychological borders.
It reduces our potential to connect across different groups.
Now, we aren't born living this, are we? The chapter stresses it's learned.
Oh, definitely. Starts super early. Human, boy, girl, basic stuff. And then it just keeps going, reinforced by everything around us.
Which leads into that belief expectation cycle. This part is fascinating.
It really is. If people keep telling you you're something, keep applying that label.
You start to believe it. You internalize it.
And then, often without even realizing, you start acting in ways that fit the label. Like that Catherine Hoke quote in the chapter.
Oh, yeah. If you keep calling yourself that, you're probably going to keep acting that way. It's powerful.
It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. If everyone treats you like you're, say, an idiot,
mm-hmm.
it's incredibly hard not to start believing it on some level.
And it's not always spoken, is it? The chapter notes how much is nonverbal.
Body language, tone of voice, how people react to you. Teachers with bright kids versus struggling kids, for example. Subtle differences, big impact.
We even touched on this back when we discussed topic 8. Even positive labels can be restrictive.
Right, like gifted or clever. Sounds great, but it can create so much pressure, fear of not living up to it.
Makes you less likely to try things you might not be immediately brilliant at, puts you on a pedestal, narrows your view.
Exactly. And another really key point the chapter makes is that disharmony, conflict, it's often learned. And we tend to label the person, not the pattern.
Explain that a bit more.
Well, instead of saying someone has psychopathic thought patterns that get triggered sometimes, we just label them a psychopath, as if that's their entire being.
Or genius, even. It's labeling a whole person based on certain triggered patterns.
Yeah. The chapter uses that analogy. Labeling someone a murderer is like saying cars are death machines.
Yeah, okay. Cars can kill, but that's not their sole purpose or inherent nature.
Precisely. People aren't born murderers. It's learned thoughts, specific circumstances, triggered patterns that lead to actions. It links back to what we covered in topic 2 about learned thoughts.
That distinction Catherine Hoke makes is vital than people who committed criminal acts versus criminals.
Yes. It separates the act from a fixed identity. And Tim Ferriss makes a similar point about self-labeling.
The difference between I feel anxiety and I am an anxious person.
Huge difference. One describes a state. The other, a seemingly permanent identity. It leaves room for change.
If we link labeling to the blame cycle, we can see how labels like right or wrong, victim or aggressor, get quickly attached to individuals or groups involved in a conflict.
Yeah, very quickly.
These labels offer a very simplistic way of understanding complex situations, often obscuring the more intricate web of factors that contribute to what actually happened. What's striking is how these labels can prevent us from seeing the different perspectives involved, the shared humanity of those in the conflict, and, well, the nuances of the situation itself.
It's almost as if the label becomes the complete explanation and we just stop digging for the deeper story. We think we know.
Precisely. And once someone is labeled as bad or an offender, it can justify condemnation and prevent any real empathy or understanding or even the possibility of resolution.
Mm.
This also connects directly to the idea of forgiveness, as we discussed in Chapter 3. Genuine forgiveness often requires us to look beyond those fixed labels, doesn't it? To see the person in a more complete and compassionate light, recognizing their inherent worth beyond the label we've assigned.
So to truly forgive, we kind of need to consciously look past the label of the one who hurt me or the perpetrator.
Absolutely. Forgiveness involves acknowledging the multifaceted nature of human behavior and understanding that labels can be incredibly limiting and even, well, dehumanizing. It's about making a choice to see the potential for growth and change rather than remaining stuck in a rigid judgment based solely on a label. So how do we break out? Think outside the box. As the chapter puts it, it even applies this to objects.
Yeah, it does. How often do we just see an object for its label, a chair, a bottle, and miss its potential for other uses.
Creativity is tied into seeing beyond the label.
Definitely. Innovation often comes from ignoring the label and asking, what else could this be?
Which brings us to that maybe slightly mind-bending idea of labeling yourself infinite.
Right. It sounds like a contradiction, using a label to escape labels.
But the idea is that infinite doesn't limit you, does it?
No. Instead of I'm a musician or I'm an engineer, it's I'm a human with infinite potential. It contains all the other possibilities.
It embraces the vastness rather than narrowing it down.
Mm-hmm. It pushes back against reducing ourselves or others. And that proverb the chapter includes.
Small minds describe people. Average minds describe groups. Great minds describe ideas.
Yeah, that really captures the goal. Move beyond surface labels. Engage with deeper concepts.
Okay, now chapter 9 does something interesting. It brings in religious perspective.
It does. And it's important to frame this not as religious teaching, but as, well, examples of psychological insight from before we had formal scientific methods.
Pre-scientific understanding of the human mind and behavior.
Exactly. Ideas understood long before, say, Francis Bacon or Descartes or the Royal Society started formalizing the scientific approach in the 17th century. These philosophical and spiritual traditions were the frameworks people used.
And the chapter uses them to kind of echo its own starting points, right? About losing the big picture through reductionism and labeling people instead of thoughts.
Precisely. It shows these aren't brand new ideas. If we just glance at a few mentioned, Christianity, for example.
Matthew 7.1, judge not. That's a big one.
And the parable of the Good Samaritan in Luke, classic example of empathy breaking right through social labels. Who helped the injured man? Not the ones expected to.
Right. And John 7.24 about judging righteously, not just by appearance. Galatians 3.28 talking about unity beyond Jew, Gentile, slave, free, male, female.
Then in Islam, Quran 49.13 talks about diversity being made into nations and tribes so that you may know one another. Diversity is a tool for connection, not division.
Interesting. And Buddhism.
The Dhammapada talking about impermanence.
Yeah.
Everything changes. That connects to the idea of an infinite self. You're not fixed by any label. Because everything is transient. Understanding that helps you turn away from suffering tied to those fixed ideas.
Hinduism.
The Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, verse 20. The self, the divine, residing in the heart of all beings. A fundamental interconnectedness beneath all the labels.
Wow. And Sikhism.
The Guru Granth Sahib, page 1299. A powerful line about being a child of the one God, not defined as Hindu or Muslim. Again, emphasizing that underlying unity.
So across all these different traditions, different times, there's this recurring theme.
Yeah, this understanding that labels, while maybe necessary on some level, can seriously obscure a deeper reality, a shared humanity. They all seem to point towards looking beyond the label.
Which loops right back to the chapter's core argument about the dangers of simplistic reductionist labeling.
It really does. It shows this is a long-standing piece of human wisdom, this caution about bossing people in. So as we've explored today, labels are far more than just convenient words. They function as, well, psychological boundaries that significantly shape how we perceive ourselves and the world around us.
Definitely.
By gaining a deeper understanding of how these labels operate and their intricate connections to our inherent fears, our pursuit of social value, and even our understanding of maturity, we can begin to critically examine the borders we've created in our own minds and consider whether they truly serve us.
It's worth thinking about.
Yeah. Take some time to reflect on the labels you encounter and use in your daily life. What kinds of boundaries are they establishing? And what new insights might you gain by looking beyond them with a sense of curiosity and compassion?
Keep potential.
Stay infinite.
And don't miss chapter 10.